Okay, today's daf is Kuf Samach Chet. We're going to start at the bottom with five lines from the bottom of Kuf Samach Zayin. Bet Ha'u Tavra. A Tavra is a Shovar. So Ha'u Tavra, there was a case with a Shovar, a receipt, to have a Chatem Ala. There was the signature at the bottom of the Shovar was Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba. So what happened? A woman came to claim her ketubah.
Can there be only one signature?
No, but one of the signatures was right. One of the people signed was Rav Yirmiya. It was basically a woman had gotten paid her ketubah money, and it was a shofar saying that the husband had paid. And lo and behold, the woman came in front of the court to get her ketubah money. So they took out the shofar. They said, "Hey, this is your shofar, and there's Rav Yirmiya signed on it." So they asked him, "Atila kamei hayi itita." So the woman comes before the court to say, "I want my money back." Amrale, lav ana havai. She says, "That's not me, the shovar that you signed on. That wasn't me." So Amar, so then they bring Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba to say, "Is this the woman whose shtar you signed for?" In other words, you can imagine, we talked about this before, two people maybe have the same name. So she says, "That's not me on the shovar." In other words, I never got my ketubah money. It must be someone else with the same name. So they asked him to identify her. So what does he say? Ananami amri lehu, lav ihihi. Yeah, I also agree. That's not her. Va'amrule. So then the people around, I'm not sure exactly who this is, who says to him, but they say to him, Mekashu dekashale ubargale kala. Okay, this woman just got a little older. She looks a little different. And her voice got more mature. Okay, whatever that means. But her voice changed. So and then he realized that in fact they were right and it is the same woman, okay? And based on that, they wouldn't allow her to get her ketubah. So Amar Bai, Afagav de Amar Rabbanan, Kevan Shi Gid Shuv Eino Chozer Magid. There's this principle that once somebody testifies about something, they can't change their testimony. And in this case, Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba first said it wasn't the woman, and then he changed and said, well, it was the woman. So why, since generally we don't accept an aid to change his testimony, but in this case we do? Okay, this is an interesting line. It means Talmidei Chachamim are not very careful about these kind of things. So the base interpretation, and we'll see, possibly the continuation supports this, and that's why most people think that this is the interpretation, is that rabbis don't generally pay attention to looking at women and being able to identify women specifically, because it's new reasons, right? They don't really look at the women, and therefore they don't really notice exactly what the women look like, and the fact that he didn't recognize this woman, that's because we didn't really expect him to necessarily recognize the woman. That's one answer. Another answer given is that maybe these types of details, we don't necessarily expect them to remember people's faces, you know, exactly what the person looked like then, what they look like now. So the fact that we, you know, it's not necessarily women specifically, it's just in general. Obviously, the general is to say, because they're specifically Tzor V'mei Rabbana, they're Talmidei Chachamim, therefore, you know, they assume it's related to Tzniut issues. Okay, we're going to continue with this. Ha'u Tavra, Dehava Chatem Alei Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba. Again, a case came before with a shofar about a woman who had gotten her ketubah money. And then, Amrle Lav Ana Havai. And she says, that wasn't me, somebody else, and I want to get my ketubah money. Amrla, Ivra, Antavat. He says, no. In fact, this is you that I signed on your shofar. I know it was you. Amr Abaye. Now, the question is what? What if he changes his mind? Is he allowed to change his mind in this case? Right? When he said he didn't recognize her, and then they convinced him, and then he realized, you're right, that is the woman, I see she changed, then we accept it. But when it's the opposite, and he identifies her first, and then says, you know, I don't think it's her. So Amar Bai, Afagav Ditzorva Merabanan Lab Orche Lemeidat. Even though generally they're not careful about these things, they don't necessarily know to be able to identify properly. Kevan didak dak. But if they do identify and they do say definitively, yes, I know it's that person, then we don't allow them to change their minds. Again, there's two interpretations about how to go with this, and it's somewhat connected to the last one. If we're saying this with women specifically, then we say that this only applies to women specifically. Okay, but and it applies specifically in this case. What we're trying to say is, if he does positively identify a woman, even though generally they don't identify women, we're going to accept it as if this is a done deal. That's the Rashbam. But Tosfot says that it's the direction of the change here. In other words, it's not important, women, whatever, but the important thing is if he first doesn't and then does identify positively, then we're going to allow that change. But if he starts off recognizing and says yes, we're not going to allow him to change and say no. Okay, because the idea is that people don't necessarily recognize people. So, but if they do claim they recognize someone, we're not assuming that the mistake happens. They think they recognize the person, they were wrong about their recognizing them. So we only think the direction is they may not recognize, they may not remember who the person was and what they look like then, and they look different now, and they came with different hairdo and a different this, and you know, you might not recognize where they aged. But if they positively identify, then we don't allow them to change their thing. And that would then apply across the board, not women related or anything, right? The idea is it's positive identification versus not identifying someone. Okay. Amar Abaye, Haitzor v'merabana. Now Abaye is telling you Etzah Tova, okay, based on this, and this is why. This case, again, I think it more supports the fact that it's a women and tsniut related issue, although lav dafka, you could explain it the other way. But Amar Abaye, Haitzor v'merabanan de'aza l'kidushe itita, this is a very interesting Etzah Tova. If you're a Talmid Chacham and you're going to betroth someone, Nidbar Ama Aretz behadei Dilma Mechafu Laminei. You should go take an Ama Aretz with you who looks at women more and is better at identifying women, or again, you could say maybe better at identifying people. Maybe the Talmidei Chachamim were too tied up in their books and they weren't on the streets enough. Maybe that's why they don't identify people as much, because we're worried, right? Like the Yaakov story, right? That maybe they're going to switch the women and they'll put the wrong woman, and this is a good indicator of how much they really knew their spouses before they got married. They might switch them around, and therefore you should take an Am Aretz with you who's going to recognize the woman that you're supposed to be betrothed to. Very interesting. See that Am Aretz and the Gemara have certain useful purposes. Okay, back to the Mishnah now about who pays for which types of documents. So now, if you remember, we had all sorts of cases. So now in a wedding case, in the divorce case, Habal notain sachar, the husband pays for the get. So we already kind of gave you the lowdown on this before, but we'll read it inside now. My time, why does the husband pay for the get to be written? Tamar krat bekatav v'natan. It says he's supposed to write it and give it. He's supposed to write it. That means either he writes it himself or he hires someone to write the get. V'ha'idna de'lo avdinan hachi. But nowadays that we don't do that, because the woman pays for the get. Shadyuhu rabanana isha. Ki hechi de'lo lishie. We're worried that if we make the husband do it, he might push off divorcing her, and that will keep her in an aguna situation, and we want to avoid aguna situations. Here, there's a few interesting, there's a good question asked, which is if the Torah says, v'katavla, and he has to write it, then how do we allow the woman to write the get? If he has a d'oraita obligation to write it, how do we make it her obligation? So there's three different interpretations I'll bring. One is that he's commanded to write it, but she's commanded to pay the money. In other words, you can distinguish between the writing and the payment. The second is we have this concept of hefker beit din hefker, so which means that the rabbis can kind of claim that your money is not really your money, it belongs to somebody else. They can move around people's money. We've seen that in different situations. And therefore, what do they in essence do? They're saying, yes, the husband's supposed to pay it. What we're in essence doing is we're making the woman the shlicha of the man. And really, the money that she's paying with her own money is really the rabbis can technically, again, why do we use this hefker beit din hefker? Here they want to make a takana. They want to make it better for the woman. So in order to make it better for the woman, when really the husband's money has to pay, what do they basically say? We're taking the woman's money, we're in an imaginary world, right? We're turning it into the husband's money. We're makir her money. That we're giving it to the husband. Again, no money changes hands here. We're just saying hypothetically, so the money moves to the husband, and then when she pays the money to the sofer, she's acting on behalf of the husband. And that's how we can be Makayim v'katavla. That's the second explanation. And the third, which seems to be the most logical explanation, is he really can pay and should pay, and the takana is only instituted in a case where he can't pay, okay? Or won't pay. Right. In other words, in the case where he's pushing off and delaying, it's not that the woman's always obligated to pay. It's just that when there's a situation, the husband's causing the wife to be an aguna, then we can, you know, have this takana go into place. And obviously, the rabbis, the mefreshim point out, which is an important thing to point out, in the days of the Gemara, she can get divorced against her will. So obviously, nobody thinks that if she's getting divorced against her will, they force the woman to pay for the get. Like, that should be very clear. Okay, it's only when she's getting divorced willingly that we can enforce this takana and force her to pay. Kutvin shtar lelove, the next case, right? We can write a shtar for the love, you can write a shtar saying, I'm borrowing this money, even if he hasn't yet borrowed the money, and the malva is not there. But then the important part they don't quote here, which is the important part, at least for the purposes of this sugya, that they're going to question is, the love has to pay for the shtar, right? The person borrowing the money obviously has to pay for the shtar. So the Gemara asks, Pshita, what do you mean? That's totally obvious. Who else what? If I'm lending you money, I'm going to have to pay for the shtar? Of course not. So what do they answer? Lo tzricha be'iska. Now we're talking about, if you remember, we talked about different halva'o, with rebeat especially, that there could be rebeat in an investment, right? An investment is sort of like a loan, because someone's loaning you the money to invest. But since you're also making a profit off of it, you being the lender, so the creditor, so basically, in that case, you might have thought that maybe they have to split the cost of the shtar, but no. Always the lova has to pay the cost. Kotvin shtar lemocher, afa pishein lokech, it's going to be the same structure. Right? The mocher can say, right, he can write a shtar, I'm selling, even if the lokech's not there. But again, who pays for the shtar? The lokeh, the person buying, pays for the shtar, because it's obviously he's buying for his own purposes, right? The seller's selling to him, but really it's the buyer who needs the shtar. So they say, pshita. So then they answer, lo tzricha b'mocher sadeh mipnei ra'ata. Sometimes the benefit is more beneficial to the seller than it is to the buyer. If the seller has bad land and is dying to get rid of it, and he finds a buyer, he's benefiting more than the buyer is benefiting. So therefore, you might have thought in that case, if he's trying to get rid of his land and it's so important to him, he needs to pay for the shtar. And the halacha is, no, it's always the lokach. Ein kotvin shtarei erusin, right? This is the, you need both sides for the shtarei erusin. But again, who pays for it? The groom's side. Why the groom's side? Because he's the one, so to speak, acquiring, purchasing. Right? I don't like to use the word purchase. Acquiring sounds a little better. He still doesn't sit right. But he acquires the woman. So again, pshita. Obviously, then he's the one to write the shtar. So they say, lo tzricha da'afilu tzorva merabanan, denichale lechamuha lekeruve. Even if she's marrying a talmid chacham, where again, the benefit is more on the woman's side than the man's side. Right? If she's marrying into a Talmid Chacham's family, so the family is so happy to be marrying this Talmid Chacham that they're marrying off their daughter to a Talmid Chacham, that you might have thought the benefit is theirs more so than his, and therefore they should write the shtar. This also, by the way, they don't bring up here, but and we saw many times and before now that the interest in getting married was much more to get the woman married than the man married, and that you might have thought that they would have suggested that here, that so much in her interest, she's the one who's nehene more than the man, right? She gets the financial security and everything else, and particularly her family benefits because they no longer need to support her. So you might have thought they would have said that, but interestingly enough, they don't offer that as a suggestion. But anyway, you needed to explain that even though that's the case, that the benefit is on her side sometimes, or maybe all the time, he still writes it because he's the one acquiring her. Ein kotvin shtar arisut v'kablanut. Okay, so again, who has to, both of them need to agree to it, but the person who's working the field, the sharecropper, has to be the one to pay for the shtar. So now they say again, pshita, because obviously he's the one benefiting, he's getting something from the person's field. So then they answer, lo tzricha bibura. Okay, which is a sadeh that lies fallow. Now, first of all, you wonder, why on earth is an aris working on a field that doesn't grow any crops? So first of all, some interpret that we're talking about a field that, we learned this before, that they would have this cycle where one year you work the field and one year you let it lay fallow. So it could be he was signing the contract in the year that it's supposed to be lay fallow, And therefore, you might have thought that since this year is not going to be a very productive year, maybe the benefit is more the other side, and that's why you need to know that still, since down the road, he gets it, he has to write it. And the other reason was... it could be that it was a sadeh bura, not that the sadeh itself, it's not exactly defined in the sadeh, and that's a bit of a weakness in this, but that the owner hadn't found anyone to work his field for a number of years. So when he finally finds someone to work his field, maybe he's so thrilled that he found somebody who's willing to be a sharecropper on his field, maybe there was a shortage of sharecroppers, that because of that, maybe you think it's in his best interest, or the benefit is more to him than the sharecropper. Again, maybe you could say supply and demand, right? If there's very few sharecroppers, then the benefit to the sharecropper isn't so great because he's got tons of work anywhere. So you might have thought, and therefore it's coming to tell you, no, always the sharecropper pays for the shtar. We talked about this already in the Mishnah, but here we'll see it inside. My shtar beirurin, what exactly does this mean? So we're going to see the two interpretations. Hacha tirgumu, here they explain that it's shtare ta'anata. Okay? Hacha is in Bavel. They explain that it's shtare ta'anata, that each side writes their claims. And Rav Yirmiyahu bar Abba amar, zebarer lo'acha v'zebarer lo'acha. Right? It's a shtar beirurin about which judge we're choosing. So we write a shtar saying, I choose this judge, I choose that judge. And the point of writing it is so that you can't be chozer bo and say, oh, by the way, I changed my mind about it. There's a debate I remember reading about, if they don't write a shtar but we read it, what point can you change your mind and say, oh, that's not the judge I want? So some people say until you start the case in court, and some people go so far as to say until the Gemar Din, you can change your mind. Okay, if there's no shtar written about it, you can change your mind and say, oh, I don't want this judge, which is crazy to think, right? You have to go through the whole case and then you realize that your judge is going to turn on you. So you can basically change judges at that point. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, and now we're going to have to figure out what's the machloka between Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. The assumption is Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is talking about this last case, Shtarei Beruin. And interestingly enough, this explanation really only goes with the Hacha Tirgumu Perush, which is Shtarei Ta'anata. It doesn't really match with Yirmiyahu bar Abba's interpretation. So assuming that we're talking about a Shtar Ta'anata, what's going to be the machlag between Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel? If you don't remember Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, we're going to read it right now. He says, L'shneim kotvim, shnaim, L'shneim kotvim shnaim, L'zeba'atzmo. To each they write two, it doesn't really mean to each two, it means they write two shtarot, and each person gets it. So if you have the shtare ta'anata, each person gets his own shtar, and each person has to pay for his own shtar. As opposed to saying they split the cost of the writing of the shtar ta'anata, here he says they each have to pay for their own. So the Gemara is trying to figure out now what's the machlok. So they're going to suggest one option, and then reject it, suggest something else. Lema, let's suggest that what's their machloket about? Bikofin al midat stone kamiflege. What's midat stone? If you remember in Pirkei Avot, it's someone who says shali shali v'shalcha shalcha. They're very selfish. They say your stuff is your stuff, my stuff is my stuff, and I don't want to get involved in your stuff. So what does it mean? Kofin al midat. That's midat stone. What's kofin al midat stone? We don't tolerate this kind of behavior. Okay, so. If we say, one guy, right, what's the case here? There's a shtar ta'anata for both of them. And the guy says, listen, I don't want to share the cost for this. I want to have my own. And you can have your own. Okay? So if we say kofin al midat stone, that means we don't allow it. And we make them each pay half for a shared document. That's Tanna Kamma. And if we say ain kofin al midat stone, it means we allow the person to say, I don't want to have anything to do with your shtar. And therefore, I'm going to have my own, and you can have your own. And therefore, each one has to pay for their own shtar. But then they say, no, dekule ama kofin. Everyone can say the kofin al midat stone. We have no tolerance for selfish behavior. So then, what's Rashbag saying? V'hachai nutamad Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, damar le, lo nicha le de tehave zchutcha gabe zchuti. De damit alai ki arya arba. One guy can say to the other guy, I don't want to have your ta'anot next to my ta'anot. Okay, we'll talk about what exactly this means in a minute. Because you, damit alai, you appear to me Ki arya arba. What does that mean? An arye orev. You're like an arye waiting to pounce on me, right? To ambush me. So you can imagine, if you're in a bad relationship with someone, you're having an argument about something, you don't want to have, according to one interpretation, it means that each document, by the way, is not identical. I have one with my ta'anot, and you have one with your ta'anot. I don't want your z'chuyot next to my z'chuyot. I don't want your z'chuyot here. It means really your ta'anot. I don't want to go home and have on my document your claims. It's just going to get me more upset at you. I'm going to say, he really said that? How could that be that you think that this is the case? That's really not the case. And if I have to read that and see it in my house, it's just going to get me more angry at you. That's one way of reading it. There was another way. One second. Ah, right. That I don't want to have z'chutcha gabei z'chuti, or the reverse. I don't want to have to always request, if we have one document, if you have that document at the time, you can imagine this also, these are both very realistic cases, if the document sits by you, then I have to request permission to get it from you. You know, already we don't have such a great relationship. And if it's by me, then you're going to have to always be trying, you know, coming into my house and asking for permission to get it from me. And I don't want to have anything to do with you, really. So let's just each have our own. Okay, and it's not because of selfish, I want my own, and you should have your own. It's that we don't want to exacerbate the relationship and make it even worse than it already is. Okay, new Mishnah. Now there's a very short Gemara on this. It's probably because we've already discussed this issue a lot. We get back to Asmachta. Okay, this is, if you remember, we had Asmachta mostly in Bava Metzia. This is one of the famous cases they quoted when they tried to establish what are the criteria for when something is Asmachta and when something's not Asmachta. Okay, just to remind you, Asmachta is when somebody says something and we assume they didn't really mean what they say. Okay, they committed to something, but it was a commitment that was not a realistic commitment. Okay, well, some of the criteria were it was exaggerated, it was something that it wasn't fully in his control to do, or again, it depends, different people have different interpretations, is it has to be something that is in his control or only partially in his control, because every time we discussed it, we had different, there's a bunch of different cases where Asmachta is mentioned, and based on the details of each case, they tried to come up with criteria that would fit each case, but there was always a little difficulty because the cases were all a little different, and therefore there's different views among the Rishonim, and there's a lot of different views about what exactly Asmachta is. There's books written about just Asmachta. We're going to get to it again in Sanhedrin. Anyway, if you remember, there's a machloket whether Asmachta is kone or it's not kone. Is it a good kinyan or is it not a good kinyan? Because maybe you never really meant what you said. So here's the case in the Mishnah. Mi shepara miktzat chovo. Okay, he paid some of his debt. Let's say he owed 100 shekel, he paid 50. And what generally happens? So normally, if I paid the whole debt, so the malva would rip up the shtar or give it to me and I would rip it up, you know, me being the borrower. But in this case, you couldn't rip up the shtar, right? So you can either write a shofar, but here he was being a little lazy. Maybe he didn't want to spend the money on the shofar, apropos the Mishnah before, right? He would have to spend money to write another shofar saying, I only paid you half. So what does he do? He pays back half the or part of the loan. V'shlish et shtaro. And he doesn't want to leave the shtar in the hands of the malve, because if he leaves it in the hands of the malve will come back to him a month later and say, hey, you owe me 100 shekel, when he really only owes him 50. So what does he say? Let's give the shtar to a third party. Both people agree. We're going to give it to a third person. That's shalish, right? A third person. V'amar, shalish is also a messenger, but it's connected with, it comes from third person, right? The messenger is someone not related. He's a third party. V'amar lo, Im lo natati lecha mikan va'ad yom ploni, tein lo shtaro. And I say, listen, we're going to give it to this shalish, but I promise you, I'm the borrower, I promise you that if I don't pay you back until this date, the shalish can return you the shtar in its entirety. Meaning, I'll pay you the full 100 shekel if I don't commit to paying it. Okay? Higi azman v'lo natan. So what happens now? If the date comes and I don't pay back. So Rabbi Yossi Omer, yitain. You said it, you have to pay it. But Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yitain. Why does Rabbi Yehuda say lo yitain? Because he says, this is a smachta. He clearly, no one would ever in their right mind intend to pay back half the loan or whatever part of the loan and then claim, oh, I'll give you the whole thing back, right? He never really meant it. He was just trying to convince the guy. Here he was only paying part of the loan back, and he said, I promise I'll give it to you by this date. But when he said, I promise, he threw in an exaggerated claim. Okay, so, you know, again, is it exaggerated? Is it disproportionate? Right, the better interpretation in this case would be disproportionate. If you remember, we saw a case of Baba Metzia, which is, im ovir velo avid ashalem alfazuza. Right, if I work your field and I don't, if I'm a sharecropper in your field and I don't work the field and the whole thing lays fallow, I'll give you elef zuz, which is a clear guzma, right? That's exaggeration. This is maybe just disproportionate. Obviously, it depends on how much the loan was. It's less exaggerated than disproportionate. But, and the question is, right, again, is this under his control, right? It's within his control to actually pay the money. Right, although maybe it's not fully in his control. Again, there's a debate whether you have to say it's both disproportionate or exaggerated and fully in his control, or some of the Rishonim say it has to be something that's partially in his control, but not fully, but not at all in his control. Okay, there's different interpretations based on all the different cases. So the Gemara says, which we already know, b'mai kamiflagei, Rabbi Yossi savar asmachta kanya, Rabbi Yehuda savar asmachta lo kanya. Okay, so even though we say asmachta is exaggeration, and maybe we shouldn't accept it, Rabbi Yossi in fact holds, no, you said it, you mean it, it's a kinyan, okay, you need to pay that money. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Ravua, Amar Rav, halacha ke Rabbi Yossi. Okay, Rav Nachman says, in the name of Rav Ravua, in the name of Rav, that we paskin like Rabbi Yossi, and asmachta is kone. Ki atu the kameja Rabbi Ami, when they brought this in front of Rabbi Ami, Amar lehu, b'chime acharsha Rabbi Yochanan melamdenu, pam rishona u'shnia, halacha ke Rabbi Yossi, ani ma'aseh. He obviously was not so happy the halacha was like Rabbi Yossi. He really didn't think asmachta should be kone. But he says, but the fact that Rabbi Yochanan said it one or two times already, in other words, he said it a few times already, the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, I can't really disagree with him. What am I going to do? Okay, so we see that Rav paskin like Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yochanan paskin like Rabbi Yossi, but we see that there was a bit of a hesitancy about actually paskin like Rabbi Yossi. And it says here, ve'en halacha ke Rabbi Yossi. But obviously, in later generations, right? Remember, Rav and Rabbi Yochanan are at the beginning of the Tkufat HaTaim Oraim. Later generations, they paskin ein halacha ke Rabbi Yossi. And really, asmachta is lo kone. Okay, and you can see also the chet, the little letter, appears by Rabbi Yehuda's shita, asmachta lo kanya, which means that we paskin that asmachta is not kone. Okay, new Mishnah. Mishanim chak shtar chovo. Okay, let's say you had a shtar, but it got wiped out. So you bought something, or you had a loan, and the shtar no longer is readable. Ma'amid alav edim. Okay, so what do? You bring edim that testify to the fact that whatever the shtar said, ubalif nebedim, v'osin lo kiyum. Okay, what do? They go before the court, and they're mekayim the shtar. Okay, they kind of, it's like they can then go over the letters, so to speak, right? And fill in and say, what do they say? Ish ploni ben ploni nimchak shtero b'yom ploni. Okay, they say so and so, right? They don't exactly go over the letters, but as if they did, right? They say, his shtar was erased on this day. Uploni uploni edav. And these are the edim that claim that this actually happened. So Tana Rabbanan, now the Bright is going to go more in detail about what you do. Ezehu kiumo, how do you do this? What do you write? B'motav talta havina, we were b'moshav shlosha, we saw this before, right? The three judges were there. Anu ploni, uploni, uploni. Right, we were the following judges sitting on the case. Ani ploni, uploni. Oh, sorry. B'motav talta havina, this was in front of three. And then they say, anu ploni, uploni. One second. Uploni hotzi. No, it's anu ploni, ploni, ploni. We were three dayanim. And then hutsi ploni ben ploni shtar machuk lefanenu. Okay, so in front of us, the judges, this person, so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, took out and erased, right, a shtar that had disappeared. The print, the ink had run, you know, disappeared. Biyom ploni, on the following day, uploni, uploni, edav. And he had the following two witnesses. Okay. Biim katuv bo, who's kachnu le'edutan shaledim, v'nimtzeit edutan mechuvenet, gove, ve'no tzarich lavi raya. Okay, if it says in the shtar that who's kachnu, which means we checked into the edim, okay, that that had signs on the shtar, and v'nimtzu'ei dukta mechuvenet. What does mechuvenet mean? It means they both confirm the same details, right? They ask them questions. We'll get to this in Sanhedrin. They ask the questions separately, right, to make sure they're really telling the truth. Then goveh ve'ein tzarich levi raya. Okay, assuming this was a loan, so we can demand the money, and we don't have to bring further proof. Vim lav, and if not, tzarich levi raya. Okay, then he has to bring a proof. One second. Right, if they both collaborate also about the date, because then we have an issue with the date. So then the Rashbam says, if not, then we have to bring other proof about the Zman and the Schum, okay, and all the things that were written in the Shtar, we'd have to bring other proof if we can't corroborate the Eidim. The Nikra, if it was ripped, then it's Pasul. But, if it was, how do we translate these words? Right, if it was torn, meaning on purpose, okay, we'll see, it's Pasul. Nitzkarea, if it just tore on its own kind of thing, we'll see exactly what the difference is in a minute, Kasher. Then the Shtar is a good Shtar. This is like when you go, you have tickets and they rip your ticket, right? So what would they do if someone paid back the money? They'd rip the shtar, okay? So if it's torn on purpose, then you can't demand the money back because you can say, right, it was torn on purpose because he paid the money back already. But if it was ripped, like some, right, it has this tear in it that doesn't look very intentional, then it's no good. So we're going to have to obviously figure out what's an intentional rip. How do you know the difference? Nimchak o nitashtesh, if it was erased or smudged. Imri shemo nikar kasher. If you can still identify the letters, right, you can still see, even though there's no ink there really, but you can see indentations or something, you can figure it out, then it's kasher. Hechidami nikra, hechidami nitkarea. Amar Rav Yehuda, nikra keresh al beitin. Okay, if it was nikra, it would be a tear of the court. Okay, that doesn't exactly help us. Hold off. Nit karea keresha eina shalbeitin. So now they're going to have to say, well, hechidami keresha shalbeitin. Amar Rav Yehuda, mikom edim u'mikom azman u'mikom atoref. It's torn specifically in the important parts, right? The edim, the time, and the details of, you know, the names of the people. Okay, so if it's ripped specifically in those spots, then we're going to assume that it was the beitin. Abayamar shtiva arev. Okay, in other words, the beitin would have like a crisp, right, like a cross kind of thing, right, down and across, and that was the way the beitin cut it. So if it's cut in any other way, then we can assume it wasn't the court. So you can already see where this would cause complications, right? Because not everybody even knew what a keresh al beitin is. So it's obviously going to be complicated how you judge whether this is a keresh al beitin or whether it's not, depending on how you hold. If you notice, okay, I didn't look up the halacha l'maaseh here, but there's letters, the vav and the zayin, by both of these things. So you'd have to look at what the psak is in this case, how they paskin like both somehow. Okay, I guess the assumption is that if it's ripped either this way or that way, then you can assume it's the court. And if it's not ripped in either one of those two ways, then you can assume that it wasn't the court. Okay, and it's very relevant because if it's written, again, just to review, if it's torn like the court, then you can't demand the money back, right? You can assume that the guy already paid his money. But if it's not ripped like the court, then you can assume that the guy still has to pay back his money.
Interesting, because they solved so much by making a uniform way of doing things, by keeping a copy of the shtar, by using a seal. Like, it's interesting how...
Well, again, keeping a copy of the shtar, like in the court, it's you're expensive. Saying, if the court kept... Right. It's a headache. In terms of making it uniform, obviously it's hard to make things uniform when people are living in different places, right? In other words, again, things developed over time. That's our whole system of law. It would be much simpler if we all, maybe in a sense, if we all did things the same way, right? But things develop because people lived in different places and different times, and it's exactly how these things develop. So yeah, it's interesting.
I would have thought like, there would be like scissor-like things. Each court would have their like scissor-like...
Right, you're like those zigzag scissors maybe, you know, where it's very clear, right.
But most people wouldn't have that implement.
Right, well, the thing is this, if I pay back my loan, I didn't necessarily go to a court to do it. That's a headache, right? I'd probably just do it with you and we rip it. So we know that we have to rip it in such a way that. What do you think of when you think about this? You think of if someone you write a check to someone, and then, you know, writes you a check, right, or something. You want to rip up that check. You rip it into teeny weeny pieces so that nobody could ever try to put that check together and use it, right? So it's the same idea, right? You want to rip it up so that it's totally unusable at some future point. It's the same thing, right? So this shtar, again, this was just a way of saving them money so they didn't have to hire a scribe to write a shofar. A receipt would be the smartest thing. Get a receipt, keep the receipt. But even a receipt is not enough because let's say you can't find the receipt. Then, right, this is classic. How many times you're missing a document that you need? Can't find it, you can't this, and then you have no proof. So, you know, for sure you have to get rid of the shtar. That's number one. Right? Get rid of the shtar. If there's no shtar, well, then the guy can't try to claim it unless, again, he pieces it back together and makes it look like it was. And so, again, the responsibility is on the lovid and make sure the shtar is sufficiently destroyed.
But what's to incentivize somebody to keep their shtar in good shape? Because it could negate their whole loan. Like they could spill water on it?
No. The malveh holds the shtar, the creditor. So it's when the lovit goes back and pays back the shtar, he has to make sure that he gets the shtar and rips it up. It's only at that point that he gets the shtar. He doesn't have it. It's exactly for that reason. He can't be left with the shtar.
Okay.
Exactly. Oops, the water, my dog, right? All sorts of things. Okay. Hanu arvai, okay, there were these aravim, the atu lepupatita, the came pupatita, Tehavu ka'anse ar'ata de'inche. You can already see something bad's going to happen, right? They tried to grab people's land, and they would take away people's land, and they would force them to give up their shtar that they bought it. So basically, these arviim would seize the land and would take the shtar that would say that they owned it. So let's say you're the owner, right? You now no longer have the shtar, you know, the deed proving that this land is yours. So atam rabatayu chameda abaye. So a bunch of these people, before their lands were taken away, they heard this was going on. They went, these landowners went in front of abaye. Amarle, lechse mar shtare. Go look, see we have a shtar for this land? The lift of la mar shtara achrine ale. Go make a copy of our shtar. They basically wanted to make a copy. And say, write us another shtar to show that in case they take away our deed, we'll have a copy of our deed for ourselves. Okay, sounds pretty reasonable, right? Right? If they take away one, we'll have another one in our hands. So Amar Lehu, Mai Avid Lehu, what can I do? I can't help you. Why? Damar of Safra, Ein Kotvin Shnei Shtarot Al Sadeh Echad. You can't have a copy of your deed, basically. Okay? Why? Dilma tarif vahadar tarif. Period. Okay? Dilma tarif vahadar tarif. What is this? If I show that I bought my land from, let's say, from Sherry. I bought my land from Sherry, and then Sherry owed money to Shira. So Shira now goes to Sherry to get her money back. Sherry doesn't have money, so Shira takes my land, right? Now, I take my shtar to Sherry, and I say, Sherry, you sold me this land. Remember, achrayutot sofer. If she didn't write achrayut, it's as if there's achrayut. Pay me the value of the land. Now, if I have two shtarot, I could go to her twice, and I could say to her, Sherry, look, Shira took my land. Pay me back the money. So basically, because we're worried that I might pull out another shtar, we never allow me to have two shtarot. Okay? I just want to make it clear. I can't have two deeds for my house because maybe some creditor will come, seize the land from me, that was really Sherry's creditor, right? From the person I bought it from. And then I'll go demand from Sherry two times that I'm owed the land. So Abai says, no can do. Even though there was this other concern. This is similar to some other cases we saw. Hava katir delay, but they kept bothering him and pestering him. Please just write it, just write it, right? We're scared we're going to lose our land. So Amarle l'safre. So what does he tell the sofrim? Okay, this is, if you remember the last time the woman was bothering Rava, what did Rava do? He wrote it, but wrote it with like some code that this is no good. So what does he tell them to do? Now this is a good chazara on a few dapim ago. Write it on, right? Write the top part on erased. And the bottom part on, right, have the Adim sign where it's not erased. Right, this part be erased, and this part not erased. And what did we say about a star like this? It's Pasul. Why is it Pasul? Because if the top's erased, what are we worried? You might erase it again, change it a second time, and you won't be able to compare to the bottom because the bottom wasn't erased at all. You won't have a sense of comparison to know that it was erased twice. So that kind of shtar is pasul. So that's what he did. He did it on a pasul shtar. Amar le Rav Acha bar Menuhin la'abaye v'dilma rishumo nikar. V'tanya nimchako nintashtesh im rishumo nikar kasher. But he says, now what did, this is a strange thing. He thought that what he meant was write out the deed, erase it, write it out again, and then sign at the bottom. So he says, since this case, the first layer might still be recognizable, in which case they'll say, oh, well, I see the Rishum is Nikar underneath, and we're going to go by the erased part underneath. And therefore, they might actually be able to use this shtar. And Abaye's whole point was to make a shtar that they couldn't use. So Amarlein, mi kamina shtar ma'alya, alef epa alma kamina. I wasn't saying write a good shtar at the bottom. I meant just scribble anything at the bottom, erase it, and then write on top of it the shtar. Okay, so basically, he was trying to write them a shtar that would never be admissible in court. And that was his solution. Okay, we'll stop here for today. We'll start up with this tomorrow.